Hi, this is Phil Lairness, sitting alongside my wife, Lily Lairness. As we travel through the third decade of the 21st century, it's good to know that the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Editions continue to produce a minimum of 4 hours of weekly audio goodness on Siren Radio and southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. Why do you have that glazed expression on your face, Lil?
Too many numbers in that announcement.
Sometimes all I need is the air that I breathe. You were listening to the Hollies version of said number there. But which one of the three movies that we're going to be focusing on today does that actually feature in? Could it actually be Ammonite? Could it possibly be The Mauritanian? Sometimes all I need is the air that I breathe. It may well be one of those aspects. Or could it be Kong versus Godzilla, or rather Godzilla versus Kong? Well, we'll guarantee that you will reveal the answers to that with our gang of three folk who are with us at present. We might be joined by a female as well before too long. But we do have Sebastian Mann from the University of Lincoln, of course. How are you, Sebastian?
I'm very well, thank you. Yeah, not too bad on a Saturday morning.
Well, exactly. Or if you listen to this on its usual Thursday morning slot, it doesn't matter what sort of time you're actually based in on that sort of basis. We're still continuing ever onwards. We also, of course, welcome Richard Fitzwilliams. How are you, Richard?
Very well indeed, thank you.
Excellent. And keeping the female end up as she does inevitably, we've got Kira Alsbrook, also from the University of Lincoln. How are you, Kira?
Hi, I'm very well, thank you. How is everyone?
All fantastic. And indeed, finally, a man who I'm sure will obviously be very keen to actually give his own review on Ammonite. That's Robin Pierce. How are you, Robin?
Hello there. How's everybody?
Well, I think we're all fine. Let's not use seconds of valuable time by asking how people are. Let's move straight into the whole process. And I think we should actually start off with The Mauritanian, which was a movie which I hadn't expected to enjoy. I'm not sure whether enjoy is the right phrase, but it certainly puts a whole perspective on the American situation in the 21st century. And maybe that American dream is turning quite sour, particularly when it comes to waterboarding. Richard, over to you.
Well, this is, I think, a remarkable film. And I mean, I saw it knowing something of the plaudits it had already received. It's based on a 2015 memoir, Guantanamo Diary, by Mohamedou Oud Salahi. And this is the true story of Salahi's experiences in the American base at Guantanamo Bay and the terrifying ordeal that he underwent. It's directed by Kevin MacDonald, who I have to say, The Last King of Scotland, a remarkable movie. He's made several, and this, I think, is excellent. We first meet Salahi in Mauritania. He's picked up by the police and handed over to the Americans. And little does he know they are going to be a 14-year stint in Guantanamo Bay, and he's interned without trial. We meet Nancy Hollander, played by Jodie Foster, who specialises in defending those regarded as terrorists, and her associate Teddy Duncan, played by Shailene Woodley, as they start to unravel what is basically a political kidnapping without due process. And it's a judgment by the Supreme Court that forces the military to cooperate in with the defense. And it isn't far that they actually do this. Every impediment is put in the way of those who represent Salahi. The prosecution believe that their case, based on post 9/11, with a military prosecutor, Lieutenant Colonel Stuart Couch, again an American, I must add, played by an English actor, Benedict Cumberbatch, in this case. He discovers how the odds are stacked against the prisoner and what has Salahi undergone. I mean, there are awful scenes of torture in this movie. We see waterboarding, we see sleep deprivation, we see a particular position where the prisoner is forced to stand and crouch, and there are flashing lights, even an absolutely surreal scene where he's actually taken out in a boat and thinks he's going to be drowned. I mean, this goes on, and these terrible conditions where they're kept in freezing cells in Guantanamo Bay, we obviously see a great deal of the way the defence visits Salahi, and he's played by Taha Rahim, and Rahim's performance somehow, and we meet, actually, I make the point that we meet the real Salahi in this film climactically. Rahim's performance is central to the excellence of this movie because somehow he manages to keep his humanity, somehow he manages to survive despite the absolutely dreadful conditions. I mean, he spent two spells fighting with the Mujahideen in Afghanistan against the Soviets, which, of course, as you remember, if anyone saw Charlie Wilson's War, that was funded by the Americans. There is a link with his cousin, with Osama bin Laden, and the Americans somehow convince themselves that he is a person of particular importance, and he only confesses under torture when his mother is threatened. This is a movie that will stay with you. Jodie Foster gives an excellent performance as the defense lawyer. But as I say, it's Taha Rahim's film. There is one flaw in this movie. I mean, the movie basically tells it as it is. But what it needs, just dramatically, is a courtroom drama. I give away no spoilers as to precisely what happens in that respect, although you've probably gathered that obviously he gets out, hence the memoir. But the facts of the matter are that there also Shailene Woodley's character, a little cliched, but there is something lacking simply in telling a story like this. That it needed a little more cinematic drama, but it is a powerful, forceful film which highlights brutal injustice, and I must recommend it on that basis.
Yeah, I'd agree totally with that, Richard. I think in terms of the overall viewpoint, it's available on Amazon Prime. So if you're an Amazon Prime person, you can obviously access that. I think there is a climactic courtroom scene, and I think it's a story that needs to be told, which is why it certainly gets an 8 out of 10 for myself. Whereas, of course...
Similar, by the way, Alex. That was my exact mark. Yes, the courtroom scene, though, is terribly brief. My point was simply that you needed the trial. I'm not suggesting that you have been able to have the trial of the Chicago 7, but I am suggesting something more, or something more lengthy with clashes would have been a dramatic bonus.
It certainly raises a large number of issues, again, with respect to the American nightmare, as it seems to have become over the last few years, and I'm not demonstrating anything there that isn't sort of shown in the film. And again, kudos to all, both Shailene Woodley and, of course, Jodie Foster, and, as you mentioned, Benedict Cumberbatch, who actually does a very passable American soul from that point of view. Sebastian, have you seen The Mauritanian?
I haven't, no, but based on both yours and Richard's review, I think I'll be checking it out. Sounds quite... It doesn't sound like a cheery film, but with you saying it's you know, a story that needs to be told.
It's not a cheery film, and neither was Good Friday a cheery day, but I think in terms of the agonies that actually the main protagonist actually goes through, and let's face it, he's completely innocent from day one, and of course the delay, and I think the no spoilers again, but at the end you do get a sequence in terms of just how much additional time was actually spent basically whilst processes were being put forward, but that's by the by. And it is a real-life story, Richard, so I mean, again, I think people probably need to be aware of this, because actually it's one of those things which we heard about Guantanamo Bay. We'd heard about some of the atrocities that were taking place in that. This is quite clearly something which I think needs to be publicised. And if it was happening in China, which it is, we'd pretty soon be actually on our hind heels with respect to this. Maybe nobody is innocent. Kira, is it a movie that you'd be checking out?
Yes, I'm actually going to watch it later. I mean, I did watch the trailer and believe it or not, I did thoroughly enjoy it. And I do really like Benedict Cumberbatch in it as well with his American accent. I didn't know he could pull it off so well. But
with after Doctor Strange, everything's magical.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I think I'll definitely check it out.
And Robin, I mean, given that this is real life as opposed to the fictional flim-flam that you actually are going to be talking about in a few moments, is it the sort of movie that you're going to be going for?
Yeah, I think so. I'd be interested in watching this one.
Moving on then, we'll have a little sort of excerpt from The Mauritanian in terms of the theme. Thank you. which is going to take us neatly round to, oh, let's go for it. And let's get it in the right order, of course. Godzilla versus Kong. Seven out of ten for me, Robin, overall. I did actually succumb to actually shelling out for the whole process. Okay. But, I mean, it's a bit like an expanded version of Stranger Things with Millie Bobby Brown not doing as quite a good a role as she did in Richard's favourite Joys of Enola Holmes. Over to you, Robin.
Well, after that, I feel like I'm walking into this review somewhat hobbled.
But I just like to fire as much as the Americans like to fire at things, basically. That's the key thing.
Godzilla versus Kong. This is actually the first film in lockdown that I very much regret not seeing first in the cinema. I can only imagine the effect it would have had, the impact and majesty of seeing two really large creatures collide. Now, kaiju films, kaiju being Japanese for giant monster, very much an art form in Japan, as we know, not doing so well in the Western world, where they're frequently played for laughs. This one has already pulled in 16.3 million domestically up to Thursday. Now, kaiju films are the Marmite of films. I think we can all agree on that. You either absolutely hate them or you love them. There is no middle ground. I'm firmly in the pro camp, and I feel that I may be in the vast minority in this particular group. But there we go. So this isn't, let's just sort out what it isn't. It's got nothing to do with the 1933 King Kong, nothing to do with the Peter Jackson remake. It follows the continuity that we've been following with the recent Godzilla movies and the Kong Skull Island film. So as we open the film up, Kong is under observation in Skull Island, his habitat. Godzilla is on a rampage and nobody knows why. Something is setting him off. So
it's probably Meghan Markle, Robin. That's all. It's probably he's been so annoyed by Meghan, he's decided to actually sort of head straight away for America and cause rampant destruction. Believe me, Godzilla will be the next one that Oprah will
interview. There is a third plot strand which they've cut out, ready for the 3-hour director's cut, where Richard Fitzwilliams is secretly controlling Godzilla to go over to Hollywood and stomp two people, one of whom might be Ginger. We don't know. Anyway, but he seems to be homing his attack in on Apex Cybernetics. Something's there that's setting Godzilla off, and this isn't the first few moments of the film. We have Kong being equally agitated. Now, there is a theory that these titans originated from a hollow part in the middle of the Earth, and there's an unbelievable energy source there which could power the world like forever and a day. So we have one team, which includes scientists, and Isa Gonzalez from I Care A Lot, going to check out what this energy source is all about. We have people trying to figure out why Godzilla's acting up. The two plots converge and there is a battle royal. Now, it doesn't end there. There is a big surprise, which I am not going to give away here, because I went into this film having seen the trailer, but they left out a huge surprise.
It's a Transformer. It's a robot in disguise.
I'm not going to give it away here. Because when I saw it, I was delighted with what I saw, being a fan of kaiju movies. The effects, well, Weta Digital have absolutely outdone themselves here. I think these are the best, most convincing effects, given the fictional nature of what they're doing, that I've seen since probably their work on the Lord of the Rings series. They've perfectly captured two different fighting styles, where Godzilla, being reptilian, seems more calculating and sly, and Kong is more bestial, relying on sheer brute force. Overall, I would give this film a 9 because in my view, my personal view, this is the kind of mindless, destructive, escapist fare that we need today, a year into lockdowns, no cinemas, pandemics. It took me away for about an hour and three quarters, and I was grateful for that. When cinemas reopen, if they choose to revisit this and put it on the big screen, I will be there to see it on the biggest screen my eyes can cope with. It's definitely a 9 for me.
Yeah, you see, I'm going for a 7, Robin, primarily because it would have got 7.5, but it lost 0.5 because it didn't have any stinger at the end. And I'm not worried about the end of Godzilla's tale. I waited all that time waiting for all the end credits. No sign of that monarch in any way, shape or form.
But at least in waiting for that sting, you weren't surrounded by sighing cinema ushers who were waiting to sweep up and get you out of the screening room.
Sebastian, Godzilla versus Kong, is it on your list of things to do? I made that ultimate decision. Where do I actually spend my pennies? Do I actually go Godzilla versus Kong or do I go Ammonite? I went Godzilla versus Kong. I think I made the wrong decision.
I haven't seen it yet, but I think I probably will be checking out. In fact, I almost certainly will. It sounds like an absolute riot, honestly. It's just, you know, two massive creatures fighting each other in a city. I think, yeah, I'm sold.
I hope that Hong Kong had been evacuated before they did battle, because Hong Kong just gets leveled. And if there were people there, the death toll must be in the hundreds of thousands, but they're never mentioned.
Well, it's a Chinese government. Why would it be mentioned? So let's progress from that point of view. Are we talking Tokyo? I don't know. Surely it'd be Tokyo as opposed to Hong Kong.
No, it is Hong Kong. They mention it several times.
Kira, Godzilla versus Kong, Ali versus Frasier. Is it one of those things which you think, yeah, let's see the smackdown?
Yeah, no, I'm definitely Team Kong though. I'm not sorry, Robin. I'm not Team Godzilla.
Oh, I was Team Kong all the way.
Oh, okay. No, I do like the idea of an entire city getting destroyed, though. I mean, that sounds really sadistic, but just watching it,
it's the pandemic pandemic bonus, Kira.
This is
you
what
know.
Lockdown's done to me. It just made me destructive. But no, honestly, I definitely want to. I've heard, though, that it's a little bit of a comedy as well with how the creatures react and things like that. So I don't know if it's as serious as it's supposed to be. Yeah,
we really need a bit of tummy tickling for King Kong, I think. A bit of tummy tickling and a little bit of sign language, and that's all good for the world, but never mind. Richard, I mean, clearly you're so gripped, where have you been, by Wallace O'Brien back in the day, and indeed subsequent incarnations of this whole wondrousness. Obviously Godzilla versus Kong will be on your list, rather like Robin, of first movies to check out on the big scene, second only to, Lawrence of Arabia.
Well, I mean, I've seen King Kong before. I mean, it does sound very, very good fun. And certainly Robin reviewed it with great panache. I mean, will I check it out? Well, quite honestly, I mean, this is the problem. When cinemas reopen, there's going to be so much to see. So if there wasn't, if there was a bit of a hiatus, which I suspect, and I have to say, I hope, after everything films have been through, that there won't be. Yes, I would certainly see it, but possibly not under the circumstances that we're in at the moment. Not on the small screen, no, because obviously it wasn't meant for that.
I don't know. I find it perfectly good on a 10-inch Amazon device to actually sort of work through the whole thing. It sort of gave... Actually, I thoroughly enjoyed it more that way than I probably would have if I'd been in the cinema, which I probably would have actually thought, oh, for goodness sake, not another building being destroyed. 7 out of 10. Sebastian, Ammonite, you decided to take that line and encountered Saoirse Ronan and others in this little thing. Before Richard gives us his sort of thoughts on this, what are your thoughts on Ammonite, Sab?
Kind of in two camps on it, really. I quite liked a lot of how it was done stylistically. Obviously, it takes place on a 1840s beachfront in England, so it's very blustery and a lot of very nice sort of sounds, very quiet interiors, very loud exteriors. I thought Saoirse Ronan, I think, I've never been quite sure on her pronunciation of her name, was pretty terrific. Kate Winslet, maybe less so, but hardly a bad performance. But I think overall I found it sort of hard to get engaged in the central story that was going on. I think there was sort of a flatness to it, which I think was intentional, but for me it didn't work as well.
Written and directed by Francis Lee, who I always thought was a fine Manchester City footballer and indeed director and indeed manufacturer of toilet rolls back in the day. No, it's a different Francis Lee. Let's find out what Robin actually makes of this, as we've said, Francis Lee epic Ammonite.
I don't think I'll be checking this one out. I think I'll stick with my giant monsters for this week.
Okay, Richard, go for it. Even though you could say that those Ammonites are fossils, the likes of which could have actually come from Skull Island if it had erupted from the centre of the Earth in the hollow Earth in our environment.
Well, an interesting connection indeed. And this was a film I really was looking forward to tremendously. One of the reasons was that its director, Francis Lee, made that really powerful celebration of gay love of God's Own Country. And that was absolutely superb. It was set in Yorkshire. And one of the aspects of the film that I thought was remarkable, everybody did, was the sense of place. You got a sense both of passion and you got a sense of place. And this movie, I thought that it succeeded most of the time on both those counts, but not with the same force. I mean, Kate Winslet playing Mary Anning, the film's heroine, a noted paleontologist, but gets little recognition in the patriarchal society of the time, even though the British Museum displays one of her early finds. She lives a very, and this is where it comes down to a movie. It is a slow movie. It is quite a long watch. It's a very, very physically demanding life she lives in the seaside village of Lyme Regis in the 1840s. She excavates the cliffs to find fossils and sells them to tourists, living with her ailing mother, Molly, played by Gemma Jones, though we do discover she's had an affair with an older woman, Elizabeth Philpott, played by Fiona Shaw, who also lives locally. Her attitude to visitors, pretty unwelcoming. She's proud, but very little money. So when a wealthy tourist, Roderick Murchison, played by James McArdle, comes to the village at the beginning of a European tour, and his wife, Charlotte, played by Saoirse Ronan, suffers from bad health, he asks Mary if he could pay for her to care for her when he's abroad, and this is accepted, and the two of them, though with very, very different personalities, nonetheless, a bond develops and they become lovers. And the relationship includes a graphic sex scene. There's no question that both actresses are superb, I thought. Winslet, it's interesting to compare this. Occasionally, there were echoes of Winslet in The Redeye, which is set post-Second World War Germany, where she plays a former Nazi concentration camp guard. And I mean, it's simply that she can imbue a role with a great deal of physicality. That's what this role demands, and that's what she does give it. And I was Saoirse Ronan's character, when her health is much afflicted, it's quite interesting to see how the character changes in the London scenes when she's restored to health. Fascinating. A movie where certainly the pace slows it down, and I did feel that. But on the other hand, you get the contrast between the countryside and Lyme Regis and the seaside, and also you get the bustle of London. I would have liked to have seen more of that. Very, very interesting, the debate. There's been, as you all know probably, a lot of debates about the fact that nobody actually knows whether Mary Anning had a lesbian relationship with Charlotte. On the other hand, I mean, I would make the point, because of the repressive laws and codes of conduct at the time, it's tragically necessary that LGBT...
No, Richard, Queen Victoria actually said... Queen Victoria never actually legislated against same-sex relationships with females because she couldn't conceive it happening. So it obviously didn't take place. So there we are.
Well, I think it's a very touching film. I think the evocation of period is very good. I do think that audiences will find the 2 hours... stretching it a little, but it's very, very well crafted, and I would recommend it.
Kira, Ammonite, is it one for yourself?
Yes and no. Purely because it's period drama, and you know, I'm a period drama girl, I love them, but it sounds very long. It does sound quite draining to watch. And you know, I think what's the nicest part about it is, you know, you see how an isolated wealthy woman, you know, kind of becomes friends and then lovers with someone who is kind of in her own little bubble. You know, she's enjoying doing what she loves, and I feel like that's the main aspect that's enjoyable to watch about the film. But I don't think I'll be checking it out. No.
Yeah. I mean, Winslet versus Ronan, it's a bit like Godzilla versus Kong, I suppose. You could actually look at that. I think I made the right decision, actually, in terms of opting for the 1 hour, 53 minutes of Godzilla versus Kong as opposed to Ammonite. But, you know, overall, that's just a by-the-by. A kind of meh overall. Marks out of 10, Richard, for Ammonite, what would you go for? I'd give it a sort of 6.
No, you haven't seen it, Alex.
That's right. Well, that's what I say. I'm giving it a 6 on the basis of your review.
Ah, right. Well, insofar as you were thinking that if you had seen it, that is what you would have given it. Well, I would give it 8. It's very good, but I mean, God's Own Country would have got 10. So, yes, it's a very touching, very involving film. But I did mention the length, and I will again. On the other hand, I would certainly recommend it.
It's only 8 minutes longer than Godzilla versus Kong.
I would have loved more...
Take out the end credits of Godzilla versus Kong. It'll be identical films, really.
Well, the end credits of this just the last, the climactic scene before that, is certainly a memorable one, at least I found it so.
And Sebastian, your mark for The Joys of Ammonite?
I think I'm with you, Alex, actually. I think I'd probably be in the 6 out of 10 range. Like I say, it is a very well-made film, and I'm sure people will maybe get a lot more out of it than I did, but I really struggled to connect at times.
Robin might be tempted to go and see it after all. I don't know. I mean, now that I've actually sold it on the basis of, think of Ronan versus Winslet as a bit like Godzilla versus Kong without the explosion.
I do like Kate Winslet films. I'm one of the few people who will openly say, you know, I thought Titanic was quite good.
It was in certain scenes, in some ways.
It was a good representation of what happened on the ship. Take that love story out of it. But otherwise, just like I think Pearl Harbor was a good representation of what happened in Pearl Harbor, but take that love triangle out of it and just see the Pearl Harbor sequence.
Nothing wrong with Kate Beckinsale.
The Pearl Harbor sequences, the battle sequences, Robin, I mean, they were terrible. In fact, I don't think you actually saw any of the Americans get killed.
Well, you wouldn't. It's an American movie. Why would you?
But you saw them come into the hospital, a lot of them in pieces. And the nurses...
But they didn't die, Robin. They didn't die.
I think it was Michael Bay, that's from memory. I mean, it really was. It was called Pearl Harbor for a reason.
Nothing wrong with Michael Bay. He's the David Lean of his era. Robin, anything
especially
you want to
when
talk?
It comes to Transformers.
Exactly. Which brings us right the way back to Godzilla versus... Oh, I won't say. Oh, no. What? See, another loser for me, Robin. No sign of Godzuki. You know, that's another sort of downer for me. I waited all the time for Godzuki.
Godzuki
no
was actually only ever in the lamentable cartoon series. Mm. Yeah. In the Toho films of the 60s, he was known as Minya.
Well, there we are. Still no sign of him. Richard, anything you want to comment on from a point of view of Kira's particular interest, Royal Matters?
Well, on Royal Matters, I think the Queen will be marking Easter privately. And, you know, I think we're looking forward, of course, to June and to the Duke recovers to his centenary. There are all sorts of reports in the papers, of course, about Harry and Meghan. And, I mean, essentially, I would make the point that it remains unclear precisely what it is they want now from the royal family. It's perfectly obvious from the interview, if you take their truth, what they said they wanted.
They want the throne, Richard. They want the throne. That's what they want. Well, why not give them the throne?
Well, in fact, Harry, of course, is sixth in line to the throne and Archie is seventh in line to the throne. So it's actually an important point that you've made, though, of course, with the Cambridges' children and one day when they marry and they have children, of course, the line to the throne, I mean, that will obviously change. But equally, as I mentioned, there are an awful lot of questions. So on the 31st of this month was, in fact, the anniversary of what was called Mexit. Obviously, everything has happened prior to that. But it does remain the question, what this relationship, what's it going to compose of a prize? Will they come to royal events? Will they attend them as members of the royal family, which, of course, they still are? Will anything more be leaked?
Will they have to curtsy in front of Oprah?
Well, I mean, will they release further footage from the interview? Will we have Gail King making further comments as to what the situation between Harry and his family is? And also, again, I mean, Harry has in recent days, he's joined Better Up, which is about coaching those who have mental health problems. He's joined the Aspen Institute, which again is helping to make the world a better place. But
so he can help his wife then. It's a win-win situation. She's great. Let's hold it there.
We're waiting to see what's going to happen in the weeks and months ahead. My own feeling, quite honestly, as far as the Sussexes are concerned, the more that happens privately, to quote the Queen's statement, the better.
Kira, you are very much our answer to Rebecca Hall / Millie Bobby Brown / Kate Winslet / Saoirse Ronan, insofar as you're keeping the female end up. Would you like to maintain that by asking the last two questions to the team, please? Over to you, Kira. You could select whoever you wish to go to first.
Okay, so team, have you enjoyed the midweek drive this week?
I have indeed, yes.
Very much so, yes.
And yeah, really. Are you joining again next week for more film reviews?
Oh, sure. Goodness me, yes.
That's what we want to hear.
Excellent. Splendid stuff. Kira, as ever, fantastic stuff from your own point of view. We will catch up with you again very shortly. Richard, any indication as to where you're going to send us next week? I mean, will it be a case of more horrendous movies based in periods of time, sort of revisiting history, or something completely different?
Well, I mean, we might very well for next week. And remember, we're heading towards the BAFTAs. We will be looking at Minari, this story of Korean immigrants in the United States and a movie that has garnered very, very high praise.
That's just one line. Robin doubtless will still be actually sort of enjoying his popcorn with respect to the Godzilla versus Kong scenario.
Well, I'll be covering something lighter. I don't know what it is yet, but you know me.
And the answer as to which movie featured the Hollies and Sometimes All I Need Is the Air That I Breathe, well, it was Godzilla vs. Kong. Now, there are an awful lot of benefits from the wonderful interconnected world we have with technology and so on, and with respect to the images and the image sharing culture that obviously occurs in all sorts of ways. However, there is a dark side, and it's a very unfortunate dark side, certainly when it comes to the whole phenomenon of revenge porn. And to actually talk us through this and indeed explain some of the ways in which people do need to be certainly be aware of this very unfortunate aspect of human behaviour, we're very pleased to actually welcome the family lawyer at Slater and Gordon, Holly Atkin. How are you, Holly?
Hi, Alex. I'm fine, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's a sigh that comes from me initially because I think, oh, please, you know, human beings, what are we doing to each other from this point of view? But perhaps you'd like to start off by saying, what is revenge porn?
Revenge porn is sharing sexual images or videos of somebody. It is without their consent and with the intent of causing them distress or embarrassment.
So, I mean, you're absolutely right. I think the key thing is it's the intent of causing distress and or embarrassment. I mean, is this just a case of, again, people wanting to kind of just get their own back at a failed relationship or a partner as they perceive from that point of view? I mean, what is this research that you've actually just engaged with? What are the key findings?
So our law firm, Slater and Gordon, has just done research which has shown the amount of victims of revenge porn has nearly doubled in the last 2 years. It's gone from 8% in 2019 to 15% in 2021. 40% of Brits said they knew someone who'd been a victim of revenge porn, and 22% said they knew someone who'd been threatened with revenge porn, and it's mostly by an ex-partner. While our research shows that 78% of the victims were women, it can happen to absolutely anybody, any age, any gender. The motive is quite often to punish them for ending the relationship or blackmail them back into the relationship or humiliate them in front of their friends or family or colleagues. And one in five of the people we spoke to said that when they did it, it was to scare the other person. The rest thought it was just a laugh or the image was their property to share. So it shows there's quite a lot of work that needs to be done really in changing attitudes towards this behaviour.
Well, you've actually put your finger on the pulse there. Surely it's not so much work as almost a whole re-education procedure that comes through. I mean, looking at those figures once again, 11% of the threats carried out by a family member, a motive again being punishment for ending the relationship, humiliation in front of their friends, and of course, again, humiliation in front of their colleagues or classmates. As I say, it's difficult to actually sort of know how we actually deal with this whole thing. Perhaps let's get the law sorted out to start off with, Holly. I mean, just actually sort of make clear the legal position when it comes to sharing somebody's content without consent.
So revenge porn is a crime. It's been a crime since 2015. And as of this month, March 2021, it's also now a crime to threaten to share somebody's images. Mm. Both of those, both sharing images and threatening to, carry a sentence of up to 2 years. So it's incredibly serious, and you can report it to the police and it will be taken very, very seriously because of the impact it has on the victim.
Sure. I mean, quite literally, it is an act of violation, admittedly mental violation, but at the same time, not something which we would wish to sort of see in any kind of civilized society. Let's talk through some hypotheticals here in terms of if people either know somebody or indeed feel that they're the victim themselves and maybe some unsavory images that might have actually been taken and so on. Because as I said at the start, we live in this very image dominant culture, etc. What are the kind of lines of advice you would actually suggest need to be followed?
Our first advice would always be speak to someone you trust. Always go to someone that can support you. You can speak to a family lawyer about the issues if you've been a victim of it or you know someone that has. And also you can call the police. It is taken very, very seriously by them and report that because it is a crime.
And in terms of people wanting to find out further information about the survey, would it be slatergordon.co.uk that you'd recommend to go to?
That's right. If you head to our website, you can contact one of the solicitors in the team who will help give you more advice on it.
I mean, Holly, from your own perspective, I mean, you're obviously in the thick of things from that point of view. As family lawyer, is this something which is a growing problem? Is it a case? I mean, you know, your own thoughts presumably would have probably presumably ranged as a human being from exasperation to just, you know, what the heck's going on here?
Yeah, well, our research has shown that the number of victims have doubled in the last 2 years. We don't necessarily see it with all of our clients or an increase in our clients, but I have had clients who've had compromising images of them shared by an ex-partner. And we deal with sort of a lot of families, married couples who've experienced it, and they might have children, they might have property together. So it's incredibly worrying, the people that it can affect.
Well, Holly, again, it's a difficult topic and one which obviously I think you're doing some excellent work in terms of raising the awareness from that point of view. A reminder, it's slatergordon.co.uk. Thank you for joining us today. Is there anything else that you wanted to add in terms of the topic from your own perspective?
Just make sure that if you are a victim or if somebody is threatening you with sharing the images, make sure you speak out about it, speak to someone that you trust or contact a lawyer as soon as you can to make sure that you get the support that you need.
Holly Atkin, family lawyer at Slater and Gordon. Huge thanks. Be well and be safe.